It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Next Monday, RAND Corporation policy analyst Shelley Culbertson is speaking at the City of Asylum about her journey through six countries in the Middle East, which culminated in the book The Fires of Spring. Her talk, in conjunction with the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh, is entitled The Arab Spring, Where Are We Today? Shelley Culbertson is a Pittsburgh native and is currently conducting research about urban services, education, and employment for Syrian refugees in Jordan, Turkey, and Lebanon. She joins me now in studio. Shelley Culbertson, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much for having me.
You were telling me just yesterday that you were profoundly impacted by your experiences in Tunisia, where the dominoes began to fall, leading to the Arab Spring as we know it. What did you experience there? What did you see that seemed to indicate that the seeds were planted for what had amounted at the time to a revolution of sorts in the Middle East?
I think that we tend to see the Middle East through a lens of reporting about violence. And what was so interesting and special about Tunisia is the path that they've started after their revolution. They had a revolution, they overthrew a government that had been in power for half a century, and then they worked together as a society to develop a new constitution and a political process. And the constitution really is a model for the Arab world. It guarantees equal rights for women. It has freedom of speech, due process, limits on presidential power, and so forth. And for me, what was so special about that was hearing the story about how it was developed. It was drafted by two polarized parts of society, the Islamists and the secularists, who got together, saw the chaos that was happening in other parts of the Middle East, decided that that's not what they wanted for their country, and sat at the negotiating table until they were able to hammer out these issues. And in many ways, it felt like stepping back into 1789 in our own country and seeing the struggle of ideas and how the basis for a society was being put on paper in a constitution.
Your book tells the stories of protest leaders, government officials, journalists, business leaders, and others describing their ideas as well as conflicting points of view. What was the common thread, though, tying all of this together?
I think that the common thread was learning from the people who'd been involved in Arab Spring and afterwards about what was really happening in their countries. Struggles of ideas, how they were going to set up societies, how they were going to develop equal rights, what the role of religion was in government, the role of women, and hearing a lot of very courageous stories of the risks that people had taken on behalf of these ideas, risking their lives, writing in blogs and so forth. So in many ways, it was a privilege to have been able to talk to them. And I think what I came out with as a bottom line is that the Arab Spring is just beginning. Arab Spring phase one was about objecting to the status quo.
And the status quo was basically oppressive.
The status quo was a set of dysfunctional governments that combined stagnation of the economy and autocracy with few rights for youth. So there was objection to this as a way of living, and that was what happened with the overthrows. But phase two, I think, will unfold in the coming decades as people really work out what they want their societies to be like, and that will be a long process.
Okay, so you've kind of undercut my next question, which is because when the Arab Spring was happening, I remember listening to NPR coverage on the radio and thinking, yeah, this was a half dozen years ago, and it felt like what was happening in Eastern Europe in the 80s. Didn't it? I mean, there were great changes with a lot of promise. The Arab Spring doesn't seem to have lived up to its promise. You're saying, well, we don't really know yet, but something didn't quite go right. What happened?
I think what we saw with the Arab Spring was a mass civilizational upheaval. But the Middle East lacked the institutions to take the ideas and the values that they were forging and to put those into practice. And so imagining that you could get rid of the bad guys at the top and within a couple of years make everything better was probably too high expectations for the region. And so when you look at historical comparisons, there were those Eastern European revolutions that have had progress, but they also were starting in a different place. I think that perhaps the most apt comparison is a set of revolutions in Europe in 1848, also called the Springtime of Nations, that looked like they were crushed and failed at the time, but really set the stage for changes in European values and institutions. But it took a generation. It wasn't an instant change.
What happened in Egypt seems to really sum up the disappointment. Upheaval brought democratic elections and a new leader, Mohamed Morsi, but now he's in jail, and no one knows if he'll ever see the light of day again, and Egypt is basically being run by the military, right? So what started out as sounding like what would be an idealistic society run by a benevolent leader has turned into a big mess, and there's no satisfying conclusion to this in sight, is there?
So Egypt had two revolutions in 2 years. The second, some people call a revolution, some people call a coup. And there's
isn't that really what it was?
It was both. It had elements of both.
Okay.
And but the second one was people were definitely objecting to the growing autocracy of the government that had been democratically elected with Mohamed Morsi. And so in many ways, it looks like Egypt is back where it was, or even worse off with a lot of mass imprisonments and so forth. But I think in the longer run, there are big changes underway. Even some of the fiercest critics of what's been happening in Egypt will acknowledge. So, for example, one of the really interesting people that I talked to in Egypt was a man named Ala El-Aswani. He's the author of the best-selling Arabic novel of all time. He's a dentist, and he spent every day out in Tahrir Square with the protests. And you know, even as a big critic of the current regime, he says what happened in Egypt was a human change. There were the political changes. The people there didn't have the institutions in place to handle it, but the Egyptian people proved that we exist. And that's a pretty powerful thing. It won't change things overnight, but it does mean that there are some fundamental changes underway that will happen over time. I also talked with Wael Ghanim, who was the man who organized Egypt's revolution from his Facebook page. He worked for Google at the time. And his explanation for why the revolutions looked like they had failed was because people knew what they didn't want. They hadn't defined what they did want. And now they're working on that. And that will take a while.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Pittsburgh native Shelley Culbertson. She is someone who has traveled extensively throughout the Middle East, currently works for the RAND Corporation as a policy analyst, and her book is called The Fires of Spring. You traveled through six countries, Tunisia. I like to say it the British way. I know you say Tunisia, tomato, tomato. Tunisia, Turkey, Iraq, Jordan, Qatar, as well as Egypt. What kind of danger did you find yourself in?
For the most part, I'm a pretty careful traveler. I've traveled through over 50 countries from my student days through a professional life and so forth. So I think I'm pretty good at avoiding a lot of trouble. At the same time, there are many things you have to be careful for. So, for example, on my last trip to Iraq, the day before that I arrived, there was a shootout between ISIS and the police in front of my hotel. So there are definitely risks, but I also think that they can be managed.
You're glossing right over that. There was a shootout in front of your hotel, ISIS and the police. So are you watching this from a window? Are you down on the floor taking cover? What's going on? What are you being instructed to do?
This was the day before that I arrived, but typically you manage your security in advance. You make sure you stay in secure hotels, that there are secure drivers, that you are managing where you go and under what circumstances. So I think a lot of that can be managed. One question I get a lot is how is that traveling as a woman through the Middle East? And in many ways, I don't really think it's a disadvantage. In some ways, it's probably an advantage because I could get people to talk to me who might not talk to me if I were a man. I can talk with both men and women there.
And so as you look at what the Arab Spring was about, what was accomplished and where do the Arab Spring nations stand today?
What was accomplished in large part was a newfound accountability that won't necessarily lead to fast improvements over time. But there are new constitutions in several countries, such as Tunisia and Egypt. There were constitutional reforms in others. In many of these, there are now term limits. Middle Eastern leaders never had term limits before. They'd be elected and then stay for life, and then their predecessors, their successors would follow that. And there's an intangible sense of accountability as well, because the governments of the region learned what the people can do. And they realized that they need to deliver, or something like that could happen again. And so while many of those protests have had the brakes put on, people are just tired of the chaos, there are changes underway, and people are working toward that.
You were talking about at the outset, well, you know, we seem to just, people just seem to associate violence with what the Middle East, nobody can get past the violence to think about what else might be going on in these countries, which is understandable. Are we ever going to see some real stabilization, or are we looking at a lot more turmoil and destruction? Because there really doesn't seem to be any end to this in sight.
I think the key for us in terms of American foreign policy is really the recognition that the Middle East is not just one place. It's not monolithic. It is a vast region that includes parts of Europe and Asia and Africa. And circumstances are very different. There's the Middle East of warfare, civil wars, violence. That would be hard to anticipate. That would be better anytime in the near future. But there's also the Middle East of innovation and change. So, for example, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Tunisia, Jordan have been doing education reform and other steps. And they've got some budding entrepreneurship scenes with some tech companies. So to the extent that we can separate those and get behind the places that are making changes and trying to develop, that's better for all of us.
And what do you see as the residual effect on Turkey of the coup attempt? President Erdogan is reportedly conducting quite a crackdown. Where do you see that all leading?
It seems as though this crackdown will be very detrimental to Turkey in the longer run. So in the last couple of days after the coup, he has fired about 60,000 civil servants, 40,000 of whom are teachers or deans or other education officials. And so in the longer run, what's happening is this: there's this overreaction that's gutting Turkey's institutions.
What is manifesting is the very thing that the Arab Spring uprising was fighting against, correct?
In 2013, there were protests against Erdogan's growing autocracy, and they weren't about government overthrow as they were in other countries, but there was a sense that while he had made great strides in Turkey's economy, that he was beginning to be a lot more autocratic, increasing role of religion in public life, clamping down on press, and so forth. And so these are really growing pressures that have been shown over time. And so it looks like Turkey is very much at risk in terms of its stability as well as its prosperous future. It had been on a very solid track, and these changes really only may be the forerunners of future problems.
It sounds kind of like Egypt. This is a very important ally to us, and that the United States might look the other way because we don't want to upset Erdogan. We need this guy, right?
The interesting thing about these relationships is that, well, Turkey's NATO. It's an important ally. There's a U.S. military base at Incirlik where the U.S. Uses to fight against ISIS. At the same time, the United States has very strong values of democracy and rule of law. So it looks like that relationship will be fairly turbulent. But this has been a longstanding relationship, and there have been significant problems in the past. And over time, they tend to just gloss over. I think similarly with Egypt, it was rocky for a little bit, and then things improve. So I wouldn't anticipate significant declines in that.
What do you know about the guy in the Poconos who allegedly orchestrated this coup from his perch in eastern Pennsylvania?
Gulen runs is the head of an Islamist movement that has they've done a lot with schools. They've been accused of infiltrating police and judiciary. What's very interesting is that Erdogan is the head of the AKP, which is an Islamist party, and Gulen is the head of an Islamist movement. And these are two Islamist parties that are at war with each other, as opposed to the usual divisions, which are secularists versus Islamists.
But you would expect that as with all religions and all organizations, that there can be infighting within the same sect, right?
They appear to be divided, and that's what Erdogan is blaming this coup attempt on. I mean, whether that was behind it or not is I don't think there are really any ways of knowing, at least from this vantage point.
Do you think the U.S. will extradite him?
I have no idea. That would just have to follow along whatever legal courses there are, and I think that just remains to be seen.
Well, it's certainly an interesting read, and you've provided us with a lot of insights with your book, The Fires of Spring. Our guest has been Pittsburgh native Shelley Culbertson. She'll be speaking at the City of Asylum next week, an event that has been coordinated by the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh. And her book, again, is The Fires of Spring, A Post-Arab Journey Through the Turbulent New Middle East. Shelley Culbertson, it's been fascinating talking to you. I strongly encourage people to go see your talk on Monday night. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Coming up, a conversation with Beach Boys founding member Al Jardine, who's coming to Pittsburgh next month as part of a tour celebrating the 50th anniversary of the seminal album Pet Sounds. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.